Hello, Marion Pallister, Vice Chair of Justice and Peace Scotland here. The Justice and Peace Commission decided as the last decade closed that one of our major campaigns in 2020 would be against the arms trade, an industry whose very existence is defined by death and destruction, an industry which earns billions of dollars and one which cost the taxpayer in Scotland plenty. Little did we know when we made that campaign decision that this opening month of 2020 would shake world stability. The news has been filled with the vocabulary of the arms trade: drones, surface-to-air missiles, rockets and anti-personnel devices, and with the devastating end results of its product use. As the Campaign Against Arms Trade, CAT for short, says on its website, the arms business has a devastating impact on human rights and security and damages economic development. Large-scale military procurement and arms exports only reinforce a militaristic approach to international problems. What does that have to do with Scotland? Why does Scotland's Justice and Peace Commission want to raise awareness of the arms trade? I have with me Andrew Smith from CAT in Scotland, and I'm hoping he'll help me with some of the answers. So, hello, Andrew.
Hello, thank you for having me.
CAT says that the arms trade is a deadly, corrupt business, that it supports conflict and human rights abusing regimes while wasting valuable resources, and that it does this with the full support of governments around the world. These are very big claims. Can you justify them to us? And can you tell us if the arms trade I'm thinking particularly about the Scottish Government here, what involvement the Scottish Government actually has?
Well, it's a very big question, so I'm going to address it bit by bit, if that's
okay.
Thank you. In terms of the way that the arms trade fuels war, I think we can see that in the recent days, actually, because an investigation from iNews found that in the immediate aftermath of the assassination of the Iranian general, the stock prices of all of the major arms companies hugely increased. In fact, £14 billion was added to the value of the 10 biggest companies. And that just isn't a perfect example of how the rush to war is a business opportunity for the arms dealers. To them, this is a cause for celebration. Their share prices are going up. That's exactly the kind of a war with Iran would be a major payday for them. And we've seen that with where UK arms sales have had a devastating impact around the world. It's been the gravest example has been in Yemen, where Saudi forces have used UK-made fighter jets to drop UK-made bombs and fire UK-made missiles, and it's created the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. Tens of thousands of people have been killed, schools have been destroyed, hospitals have been destroyed, and yet, because of its place as the by far largest buyer of arms, the Saudi dictatorship has known that it can depend on the uncritical support of the UK government. Now, of course, the UK government is not the only arms-dealing government in the world, but it's certainly among the biggest. The UK government's own figures put it as the second largest arms exporter in the world, behind the US when taken on a 10-year period. And where those arms are going is very often to conflict zones. The UK industry is actually a very regionalised industry, because although the arms are sold around the world, about 60% of the total UK trade goes to one small region, and that's the Middle East. And that is basically a region which has seen a disproportionate amount of conflict. And that's only been exacerbated and fueled by companies like BAE Systems working with governments like the UK government to try to maximise exports to that region. And we know that UK-made weapons have been used not just in the bombing of Yemen, but also in the bombing and oppression of people in Gaza. Also of the by Turkish forces in the war in Syria over recent months as well. So undoubtedly, when these weapons are being sold, they're being sold with the intention of them being used, and if not used directly, then used for the threat of violence as well, because that can be very powerful. In terms of the role of the Scottish Government, the Scottish Government role is more indirect because obviously arms exports are not a devolved area, so it's something which is overseen by the UK Government. It has to be said that the SNP representatives in Westminster have been very critical of the UK arms trade, but the SNP government up here has been, I think it's fair to say, has been a bit more flexible, because large amounts of public money, about £15 to £20 million worth of public money, has been given to arms companies for research and development over the last decade or so by the Scottish government, and they include companies like Raytheon, which produces the missiles which are being used by Saudi forces in Yemen. They include Leonardo, whose fighter jet parts are being used by Turkish forces in Syria. And they've always made the claim that this money is not to fund research, but this is still going on to positively, that this money is not being used to directly produce arms. But it's being done for research which can be used for the production of arms down the line. And in any case, these are multi-billion pound arms companies who should not be getting public subsidies for their devastating business, because the impacts are not going to be felt by people in Scotland. They're going to be felt by people in other countries who might be far, far away, but a lot of those crimes and atrocities can start right here on our doorstep.
So, top arms dealers include companies in, I think you mentioned the UK coming second to the US, but I think probably maybe five major United Nations member countries. And as you say, within the UK, Scotland plays that role, although it may be a little bit indirect with major companies operating here. We might not like what those weapons do, and you've described that quite vividly. And I've got to say, this wealth earned may seem obscene, but I want to get my head around what you're saying, that Scottish taxpayers' money actually enriches the coffers of those arms manufacturers.
Oh, absolutely. And actually, to be clear, a lot of weapons which are used in wars are produced here in Scotland. The regulation for the exports of weapons made in Scotland is done by the UK government, mm-hmm. but there is public funding from the Scottish government for these companies as well. And probably the gravest example of where Scottish weapons have played a devastating impact is the Paveway 4 missiles, which are made by Raytheon and Glenrothes, because these have been used for 4 years now by Saudi forces in Yemen in that devastating war. And these particular missiles have been linked to attacks on civilian infrastructure, attacks on civilian targets. And we now know that those arms sales were done illegally, because the Court of Appeal found in our favour last summer in a case we brought against the UK government about the legality of arms exports to Saudi Arabia. It was found that those sales had been awarded illegally. Now, obviously, that's a very useful thing to find out, and it was a very, very important court case, and I wouldn't want to detract anything from it. It was a major achievement for the peace movement. But it was also too late, because by this point, billions of pounds worth of missiles had already left these shores, including the ones which were made in Glenrothes. And we don't know what atrocities they could be used in. And this is one of the central points about the arms trade, is that once a weapon leaves these shores, there's actually very little control over how it might be used. There's absolutely no control over who it could be used against. And I've always feared that the arms sales which are being supported today could be used in atrocities for decades and decades to come.
Yeah, and when you think about the extent of it, I was reading that 100 billion with a B, $100 billion worth of, gosh, every type of weapon, from rifles to warships with guided missiles, are sold by UK companies every year. Is that, that's, yeah? Am I figures correct or not?
That figure does actually sound higher than I would have expected to be. There'll be variations every year, and so no 2 years will be quite the same. A major fighter jet deal can hugely distort it 1 year, for example. But certainly, when figures haven't been as high, it's been not been through lack of trying, it's fair to say. But also we don't know the full extent of the figures, because on the CAT website, cat.org.uk, we have a browser where you can we list every arms license which has been granted by government. However, they only tell part of the story. They don't tell you about the value of maintenance contracts, which will be worth a lot more on top of that. They don't tell you about open licenses, which are really... I'm going to slightly go down a rabbit hole, but I promise this will be interesting. We think about usually think about arms licenses as being, say, a missile license for X amount of missiles to be sold and money to be exchanged for them. But the government also uses something which is called an open license mechanism, which is where a buyer can buy an unlimited quantity of a weapon without having to ever disclose the true value of it. And these contracts can last 5 years. And we know through FOIs that an awful lot of bombs and missiles being used by Saudi forces in Yemen have gone through under open licenses. So we'll never know the total value of these arms sales. We'll never know even close to it, because these are very expensive pieces of kit. And one of the reasons why companies are using this mechanism more, I believe, is to avoid that scrutiny, is to avoid people finding out about the true value of the horrible deals which we've been doing, the terrible deals which have been taking place. And this is where the value of these arms sales could be totally stacking up without us being any the wiser. But it's not an industry which welcomes transparency. In fact, it's an industry which quite enjoys hiding behind a cloak and operating in the dark. That's where it would much rather operate, because I think even the arms companies are a little bit ashamed of some of the things they do and of some of the terrible consequences of the weapons they sell. They might try to justify it to themselves. The arms company heads have to be able to justify to themselves why they're taking multi-million pound salaries for doing jobs which are making the world a lot more dangerous. And I imagine even they must have their doubts at some point or another. And that's why I think we are seeing the use of these kind of shadowy mechanisms to hide the true value of what we're doing. The exception to the rule is when an arms fair rolls into town, and every 2 years London hosts the Defence and Security Equipment International, DSEI, which is the largest arms fair in Europe. And that sees repressive regimes from all around the world descending on the UK, where they'll meet with representatives from all of the world's biggest arms companies. And there they can buy everything, really. You can buy fighter jets, you can buy warships, you can buy bombs, you can buy missiles, you can buy bullets, you can buy tear gas. Every single weapon you could possibly think of was under one roof in London for people to buy. And this is where the Scottish peace movement had a major victory in 2018, because Glasgow was hosting an arms fair. It was a smaller arms fair than DSEI. It was under Sea Defence Technology, which is specifically focused on kind of the naval markets and naval exports. And hundreds of people took action to protest outside it, to write to their councillors, to write to their MPs, write to their MSPs about it. And as a result, it worked. Glasgow City Council said that they would not be hosting these events again. In true Scottish politics form, the current city SNP council blamed it on the previous Labour council, who blamed it on the SNP council. But I think the end result was an important one, which was that Glasgow City Council had sent a clear and unambiguous statement to the arms dealers that you're not welcome here. And they may have been forced to do it, but I thought it was a very important victory for the peace movement here.
Well, I was going to ask you, and as we're heading towards the end of our chat here, what can we do as individuals, as justice and peace groups, and as a commission indeed? I know that there is advice on your website at www.caat.org.uk /get involved. That bit was interesting. But give us just two quick suggestions, really quick suggestions to consider as the news of still more carnage around the world is reported.
Well, I think one of them is to get involved in a local group. It doesn't need to be a CAT local group. It could be any kind of peace group in your area, because what does create change is like-minded people coming together and pushing for change. And we have a very strong group operating in Edinburgh. We're kind of building one in Glasgow, but we work with our friends in the Scottish Peace Network and other groups as well. And we'd definitely urge anyone listening to join those organisations. The second thing, I'm going to be a little bit opportunistic here, if that's okay. We are about to advertise a job for a Scotland coordinator, and we would encourage anybody listening to apply for that role as well, or to share that job description when it goes up live with anyone who they think would be interested. It'll be on caat.org.uk.
Thank you very much. I'm glad that you took that opportunity, and I hope that you'll keep guiding us through this campaign.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Excellent, I enjoyed that.